Like,
they were a playoff team that didn't throw every last asset toward the LeBron and AD era. But they didn't.
And that's part of why LeBron now is kind of like looking at them sideways in an offseason where they'd kind of sort of like to get him at $15 million a year.
Would they?
You know? Yes, they would like to get him at $15 million a year.
We'll see.
You know? But I think that's part of why the relationship between LeBron and Clutch and the Lakers is where it is, because they have been kind of, you know, sad hand jobbing this whole situation for like three years.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like that's where we've been, is that they've been setting up the ducks in a row for this season. They, you know, wanted to be as good as they could while waiting for this offseason to be able to really go for it. And so it is a two timeline thing. And yeah, ideally it would be like, okay, we're not going to be really lining it up until 26. Let's liquidate for assets. But that's like Lakers had to play a game that was a little bit in between. And yeah, that long term is not as good as having those assets. But there's also not like you don't have the calm-ish waters. But over the last couple of years where you're winning 50 games, you get to the first round last year, the second round this year. Like this was not we weren't, you know, barbarians at the gates with our pitchforks and torches this year toward the team. And like, that's important for them too, you know? So yeah, I get your point, but I think that's just the two timelines they were navigating.
Yeah. I guess like I'm always going to look at things where it's like, if you aren't competing for a championship, then like compete to eventually win a championship, you know? And you know, like my you know this, I'm a Vikings fan. My buddy down the street is also a Vikings fan. And I asked him one day, I was like, would you rather be where like the Vikings are, where every year they have a pretty good team? You're never gonna win a Super Bowl. You're never in on like Aaron Donald, you're never in on Miles Garrett. You're always like an okay team, and you're always gonna win around 10 to 12 games. Occasionally you'll jump up a couple of games. Occasionally you'll fall down a couple of games. But for the most part, being a Vikings fan is like it's a pizza life. There's no such thing as a bad slice of pizza, right?
Right.
But I would love to see the Vikings win a Super Bowl. And I just don't think I'm ever going to see the Vikings win a Super Bowl because of their approach to this. And with like this approach that the Lakers have done, they find themselves, they have Luka Doncic, but they don't necessarily have all of the assets that you would like to be able to build with Luka Doncic for, because they've been okay for the last few years. You just, I just don't think, now today's NBA is rewarding teams for being okay. Which, you know, we'll see what that looks like, you know, down the road, but we'll see.
Look, man, I understand and even defend sort of the rationale of getting here. Like, to whatever degree I agree, like, I think getting Luka validates their idea. But if they don't nail that shit this summer, and like, my thought is, I want to see a championship on the horizon at the end of this summer. If you need to make a trade deadline deal for the missing, you know what I'm saying? Not like one piece or something like that, but the whole, what invalidates their whole theory on waiting and kind of being in this in-between place the last couple of years is if you wait for all of that and then you come out with a team that's like, okay, again, it's like we're a 53-win team this year, a 55-win team, but not a contender. And then it's like, oh, hell no, because then we just wasted these other seasons of being in between, and then I'm going to be pissed off. So I have my anger in reserve for this, Anthony, I promise you. Like, I'm not just trying to defend them. I understand their perspective, but they have to, like, nail this summer for the whole thing, for proof of concept, you know?
Yeah, no, that we a zillion percent agree on. Let's discuss this. Well, which would you rather do, Miles Turner or the Knicks and Spurs?
Let's do Turner. We've been on the sort of off season.
My thinking with Turner is that I think the Lakers next season are going to have to be able to throw five out as one of the pitches that they can confidently throw. Not like Christian Wood, maybe, you know, not that like slider that your pitcher worked on midway through the season. Like, no, I want the Lakers to be able to throw five out as a pitch that, you know, big spot, you know, 2-2 count with a runner on second, your pitcher is willing to throw that pitch, at least to surprise a batter. That's where I'm at with five out, and I'm looking across the market, and it's like, do you want to bet on Kristaps Porzingis immune system? Do you want to, you know, do you want to gamble on Nikola Vucevic an exception? Like, my thing with Turner is, of all of the bigs that you defend, could possibly acquire, who allows you to play five out, he's the only one I've seen play even decently in a playoff in the last few years. And that's where I arrive at, like, damn it, I think the Lakers, he's like Thanos. He's like trade rumor Thanos. Like, you go all of that, you come back to me. I'm interested in Miles Turner. Yeah, I'm interested in Miles Turner this summer.
It's so funny how eras, like, I was laughing with somebody yesterday how, like, the Celtics always have some goon on the bench that's like, it's been like Greg Kite to Baylor Shireman and all of Eric Montross and all of these guys, all of these guys in between. It's the same type of thing here where the Pacers always seem to have a big man that is in perpetual Laker rumors. Like, back in my day, it was Jermaine O'Neal. I swear to God, we traded for Jermaine O'Neal for 10 fucking years. And never ended up landing him, right? There's a Bynum rumor. Danny Granger was involved. It was sad. It was almost broke. And now Turner has been, like, how many years has Turner been involved in Laker trade rumors?
But yeah, you can, like, schedule the tweet.
That's part of the reason why is, and even that resolution of having Turner at the five around AD, that's part of the reason he was in those talks. Like, you talk about AD wanting to play the four. A five like that can open that up and make that at least feasible. I also totally understand the, like, if you watch Miles Turner, especially this year, it was like, he's so
really
meh.
Bad.
He's so meh for, like, the amount of money that he makes, that just the ability to go five out, it's like, I don't know, can we bring Bobby?
That's Portis a lot of resources pitch? Just like, for one potential pitch.
Right. And then, but as you said, like, a lot of the guys that can go five out are twigs. Like, that's one thing about Turner. He's not the shot blocker that he used to be, but he's also not a guy that's so skinny that you can just kind of go through him. But a lot of those stretch type five type of guys are not really as solid. And if they are, they can't really move their feet. And Turner can move his feet a little bit on the perimeter. So it's really paying for a level of two-way play in your five out look, which is important. You can't credibly go five out. Like, a lot of these teams that can do it are, you know, have Wamby and Chet and Evan Mobley, and Chet and Mobley are two guys that I can get on, you know, but, like, they do facilitate kind of these type of looks because of that versatility. And so, but they're skinny, you know, and so finding those guys that can do that, it's tough. So yeah, the five out market is very thin.
The Turner thing also, you know, Milwaukee is really trying to get off of money for the post Giannis era. And I don't think they would be able to get anything for taking Turner's contract. Like, you and I have talked about this off the air, and then I've kind of asked around, and because there's at least two other teams that I've heard that are kind of interested in Turner, the idea that, like, you can get, like, a second rounder or two second rounders for taking on Turner, maybe you could get off of Vando's money for taking on, you know, Turner, or, like, Vando's contract goes elsewhere as part of the deal, and you open up that much more money, or you keep some money open. But, like, Turner, you know, he has 2 years and a player option left on his contract. He is approaching 30. That contract takes him through to his age 32 season. It's one of those contracts that we can already report he has picked up that option, for the player option. But the other thing too is, like, if you acquire Turner and Ayton opts in, your center rotation is in kind of an interesting spot, right? Especially if you re-sign Jackson, because now you have three very different bigs that you have, right? You have your athletic rim runner, over the top finisher in Jackson. You have your kind of bigger anchor big in Ayton. You have your floor spacer in Turner. Theoretically, even though I don't think JJ would ever go to a lineup with both of, like, two of those bigs in the same lineup, but theoretically, you could play a really bulked up team with Turner and Jackson, or Turner and Ayton, or something along those lines. I just think he opens up some things for the Lakers that like, if you try to fill this role by other cheaper means, that player that you acquire is not going to play in the playoffs. I can already predict, like, whatever player that the Lakers acquire that doesn't involve paying $25-ish million a year to Turner, that player that you pay somebody $13 million to or $7 million to, that player is not going to be a 16-win player. And, like, that's the point here.
That's the whole point of it, right? Right.
You know,
but he's so meh. He's so like.
But like, all right, how much of his mehness has to do with that? That no, you're absolutely right. It's the exact word to use, right? But it's like, how much of that meh-ness has to do with Milwaukee, which was basically like Milwaukee last year. You know,
he was the
like
starting everything. Center in the finals the year before that, right? Like,
yeah,
it's both. Like, I think he's lost a step defensively. He was a guy a couple of years ago that I thought was really, but I don't say that based off of his play in Milwaukee, because I do think that's heavily influenced on we kind of suck and this is nothing nowhere near as fun as it was last year in Indiana, like from a player experience. But I got my money, I got my long-term contract and all that. So I'm set, you know, so I thought his like effort level, but that's not super uncommon. I don't love his personality as well, but the skill set, I totally agree with your point that like, if you dip below, he might be the floor of like, yeah, he could be our starting center for the freaking good team. That's you know what I mean?
He's like the lowest rung on the ladder that like you avoid getting eaten by sharks, you know, like the whole time that your foot is on that rung of the ladder, you're like, please don't jump. Please don't jump. Yeah. You know? there's just no other options, you know, that I would be all that thrilled about. And I think that's something like, do you agree that that's something that the Lakers have to be able to do next year?
I do. That's something that I was while watching San Antonio versus OKC. And I think you see an extension of that with Cat versus Wemby, of how important this is at the highest level. So this is something that I very much believe. I do think it needs to be a pitch, but if I think it can be a, like, they either need a five, like a killer role man five, who's a defender of the rim, like Kessler is the guy who comes to mind, in that respect, or, that if you're not a stretch five, and even he started taking a few of those at the beginning of last year. If you're not, you're just really good on both ends of the floor at both, then you could do that. But otherwise, like, yeah, I think that it can be that. This is sort of why I go toward the three-headed monster idea, is when I go through the league, it's like, oh, he's not going to be available or he's not good enough. And Turner is sort of in that gray area of the two, where I go more and more toward, there is that bucket of guys that are 15 million or so that I think can provide that type of look. I just also agree with your point that you got to have a closing five. That dude's probably not gonna, like, is Mitchell Robinson gonna close the game for us? Is Time Lord could close? I love Time. If he was healthy, I would love to get Time Lord. Yeah. But even he, like, neither of those guys are starters, for example, but they're those type of bigs in that $15 million range. Like, that's not really the caliber of five that you see at the highest levels here with Cat and Wemby and all them dudes.
Yeah, Time Lord is a guy that I have on my radar just because it's a very Dodgers-y move. Somebody that the Lakers have liked over the last few years anyway, finally got healthy, and now the Lakers are going to have like Dodgers resources for their medical team. Mm-hmm. And I could see,
honestly, he's legit healthy. Good. Like, he's the one guy of that lower, like, you, if you're not paying a ton of money, that I'm like, oh yeah, he's totally good enough. It's not a talent issue with him. Like, he's strong. He's obviously really even super explosive. He can switch. He can run drops. He can show high. Like, he's a really good player when he's, I've loved him for years, but just the injury issues, man.
See, it was Blazers Spurs in the first round, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He played well in that series, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. He's a good playoff player. He's been good in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I love he just doesn't get moved. And I think that's like critical. Like that's the one knock on Jackson, right? He would be so much more valuable if he gets moved so easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're going to be able to get Kessler.
Agreed.
The Denver situation intrigues me. I do think the Lakers would be smart to throw an offer at Watson and then see what shakes out from it, you know?
Okay.
But that also ties up that money for 48 hours and, you know, free agency moves quickly. So, but I do think though that like, if you basically throw like a $32 to $35 million offer at Denver and force Kroenke to face staring, you know, like to stare luxury taxes down. That like forces his hand to either sign, you know, to match the offer or to trade like a Cam Johnson or a Brown or Christian Brown or an Aaron Gordon. Gordon, I've as somebody I've seen linked to the Lakers a little bit. I'm just so nervous about his hamstrings. Like I'm worried that they're just toast at this point, but we'll see. Let's run through some of the questions here. Let me just make sure. Yeah, we do. Wow, we do. All right. So if you have to roll out here, Pete.
We were talking spiciness earlier.
let's go over here and play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! Yep, she's right, writes, AR is an injury-prone regular season riser and playoff dropper that can't defend. He wouldn't have been able to get us out of the first round versus Houston. We need to sign and trade him. I want Caruso. A lot going on there. I think that's too far to the end of the, like, not liking Austin spectrum.
I try not to tell other people how to fan if that's how they feel. You know, that's... Mm-hmm. That's how they feel. But yeah, I think that's a little extreme.
Also, the sign and trade thing is complicated because I believe that would immediately lock the Lakers in at the first apron, right? And
traded somebody. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or no, if we're receiving the player, we can trade a player out and be fine.
Yeah.
But we can't receive a player in on a sign and trade. So we'd be okay, I think.
But it also limits the number of teams that Austin would be able to go to. And like the Atlanta,
doesn't it increase them though? Cause doesn't it open up to some teams that they could trade out that don't currently have the cap space to pay Austin? I think a sign and trade for him actually, like if there are other teams that wanted even Atlanta, like one of the ways they could get out of the money would be via sign and trade. So yeah.
No, I mean that, the number of teams that would be limited to the first apron, it would limit like just inherently, but as far as like pathways here, Atlanta is really the team that I keep coming back to. They've liked him for years. I've heard that their coach really, really likes him. And, if the Lakers do reach that walk away number, Atlanta has a number of guys that I'd be kind of sort of interested in. It's like, man, it sucks to see Austin go, but you know, like if you could get like a Dyson Daniels out of it, like would kind of suck to see Austin go, but at least you get something useful. BG the Kid writes, the CBA sucks because teams get punished for drafting well and signing free agents that end up overperforming their contracts. Adam Silver is a chump. Agreed 100% on that last part. But the thing that like I wish the league did better, and I know that why it doesn't exist this way, but the thing that I wish that the league did better was like, remember when the Lakers signed Malik Monk, mm-hmm. and it was just crystal clear that they weren't going to be able to retain him because mm-hmm. he was so far outplaying his contract. And it's like, I wish that like when you sign a player who becomes an unrestricted free agent at a certain point, like within the first like 5 years of his career, that you just get at least partial bird rights on that player, like just to be able to retain that player that you gambled on and maybe developed or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's something that I wish the league would do, but like the cheaper owners would never allow that kind of advantage for the Lakers.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think we have one more here. Yep, she's right. Also writes, Brunson is a perfect example of an unproven player that took a pay cut to win. AR should do the same. AR has been drinking too many acai smoothies. Is Austin a smoothie? I guess he is a smoothie guy. He drinks one after every game. I see him like sipping on some kind of smoothie there. I don't know to what extent Brunson took a pay cut.
Oh, he took a big time pay cut. It was like $113 million less than he could have taken in November or in July 2024. Oh, that's right. He makes less than all the numbers we've been talking about for Austin. That's part of my that's the cheat code that the Knicks have. Aside from not having any bad money on the books, it's absolutely right. I think Brunson makes like $37 million, and that's why they were able to have such a good ass team around him. And like all of the, you know, the Becky Hammond, you know, too small to do that. It was like, well, if you got a good enough team around you, maybe not. Maybe you can. And a big part of that is because he didn't, like, again, it was like 113 million less over the lifetime of the contract.
That's right. Weren't there like tampering? They literally got in trouble for tampering for him once.
That was before, I think, with Dallas, like in the exchange from when he went from Dallas to the Knicks. This was the extension.
Or capture convention. After. Weren't there some capture convention?
Oh, were there? I don't know about that. Yeah.
I forget if Pablo says that they were going to look into that next or what, but that is, yeah. And that, and now that you say that, I remember the contract, and honestly, like, while we're kind of sort of on the subject, there is nothing that NBA players should be rooting for more than Victor Wembanyama taking every single penny of the max contract that he could possibly get from the Spurs, because every penny under max value that he could get, like, over the course of his career, becomes such a multiplier market inefficiency. Yeah,
why would he do that? Why would he do that?
I don't know. Why would Jalen Brunson have done that? Why would, you know?
I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Fair. So, but like, look, the numbers are so astronomical at this point that, like, I was hoping we would arrive at a place where these guys didn't need every single penny of all of these contracts, you know? Like, even while we're talking about how uncomfortable I am talking about guys taking so-and-so pay cut contracts, it's like, I mean, you're still going to be making $30 million.
That is part of the humorous part, is like two dudes that don't have those kind of zeros on our contracts being like, isn't it a shame he is only making $37 million this year?
Damn shit. Pete, anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Nah, man. It was great talking to you.
This was a fun one. That is going to do it for this episode, this week's episode here on the Lounge podcast feed. Please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Check out Pete's show, LFR. It's always excellent over there with Darius. And until the next time you guys hear from us, which will be Sunday, have a great rest of your guys' weekend. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you guys then.